So, hello everyone. I'm George. I joined MIT a year ago. I work with David Clark. And what I'm really interested in is understanding the state and the health of the internet. And I think a study of congestion is a good beginning. I have to say that I'm going to present results that are a product of teamwork. So there is the local team here with Steve and Bill and David. And we have a close collaboration with CADA. CADA is a research institute in the University of California, San Diego, where they develop their own tools, software as well as hardware, for example, Raspberry Pis that they put in the internet in order to measure the internet congestion and other parameters. And recently, we started a very close collaboration with Akamai, which is a large CDN that has vantage points where we cannot put Raspberry Pis all over the world. So let's first understand why congestion is a concern. And after the talk of David, I think it's clear that any disruption have a clear effect, any disruption in the internet can have a clear effect on the productivity and the user experience. I want to give some numbers. So some studies from Amazon found that if you delay by 100 milliseconds the response to a user, you may lose up to 1% of your sales. This looks a small percentage, but you know, if we're talking about billions of dollars, this is a real number. Google also found out that by increasing the delay, they lose more and more customers. And for example, if you reach 500 milliseconds, you may lose 20% of your clicks. So these numbers may look high. So you said, okay, but I cannot have 100 millisecond congestion in the internet. But this is the response time. So this is the time that you press the button that you want something to actually see it in your screen. So this involves, for example, the time that you have to do a DNS resolution, the time that you have to contact the server, the time that you have to fetch the object, and the time that you have to present it in the screen. So by adding delays in the network, you contribute to this overall time for response. And realistically, when you're browsing, in order to download a web page, it may take up to 300 milliseconds, 400 milliseconds. Sometimes if a web page has many objects, it can get 1 second. So when we talk about a few milliseconds in the wire, this can be translated to many milliseconds for the overall feedback. Yes? So you are talking about the overall? Yeah, I mean, congestion is something that happens within the network, for example, in the buffering, and this deletes packets.
So it's buffering.
It's mostly buffering.
Right, so buffering. No, I'm not saying there's no data, but it just doesn't draw like as clear a relationship with buffering and congestion.
Right, so I'm going to explain maybe later what is the relationship. What I want to say is that and every time that you add buffering in the network, this can have a multiplicative effect in the overall experience. And when you see these numbers, we're not talking about only network delays or only network buffering, but network buffering is a contributing factor. The same happens also in the video. So in the video, there is the initial buffering time where you have to get some frames in order to start watching the video. There are some empirical measures, mainly by Akamai and some other video providers, where they say that if you wait for more than 1 or 2 seconds in order to start streaming, then you know the users may abandon the service, and sometimes they may not come back for weeks or even months. And if you experience buffering inside the network that creates jitter, then it's possible that users watch less video and also watch less advertisements. So again, as David said, it's not a clear correlation of what is the effect of congestion to the overall delay, but clearly it's a contributing factor. Yes?
As a way to answer in response to the last question, that this word congestion is used in the context of strong, daily, repeated variation.
Right. So I'm going to give a better definition as we move, but I just want to motivate that, you know, a few milliseconds can actually make a difference. Also, when I was creating these slides, I found also some unintended consequences that buffering or delays may have in the internet. For example, NTP relies on smooth operation of the network. So by adding delays or congestion, buffering may actually decrease the accuracy of this protocol, which is essential for some network operations or also for client-server operations. So it's also important not only to try to measure congestion in the network, but also understand where it happens. So for example, if a link in the access is congested, maybe this affects a few hundreds of users, maybe in a neighborhood or in a small town. If it happens in the interconnection points, this also has a multiplicative effect because it may delay millions or hundreds of thousands of users. So, and also what we try to understand is we, by collecting different measurements, we try to understand what are the root causes. Of course, this is the first year of the study, so we don't have answers to all these questions, but we want to understand, is congestion a product of conflicts between networks? Is this something more fundamental that has to do with the architecture of the internet? It has to do with the types of peering that we're using? We don't know yet. So when we started this project, I have to say that there were more articles than data. So there are some anecdotal evidence that, yes, there is congestion in the internet, but there was no actual data collected. And what we try to do is to build a platform where we can collect data and provide an unbiased view. So we don't want to take the part of one or the other. We just want to understand if there is congestion in the internet, where it happens, and if possible, create what we call a heat map of the congestion in the internet. So try to understand, is the congestion happens in specific regions, in specific locations, specific peering points, and why? So here, in this presentation, I'm going to focus on what we call persistent congestion, which means buffering that lasts for some time. So we're not talking about just a spike for a few minutes. That runs for some hours and has some periodicity. So if it happens one day, it doesn't happen all the other days, we probably have to ignore it because there are too many reasons why this may happen. So we're talking about long-lasting congestions, or if you want, queue buffering that lasts for days. And we don't want to create congestion, so we want to create tools that measure congestion without actually creating or bias the experiment that we do. So the talk has two parts. The first part is a small repetition of a study that was done by GATA people and MIT people last year, where the focus there is if you want to measure your own network, or if you want to measure some specific targeted links, how you can do this in a scalable way. And the second part, I'm going to present the study we had with Akamai, where we take these initial observations and these tools in order to scale it up to internet scale and see where the congestion is in the internet. So in the first part, we utilize the vantage points that can be, for example, your laptop at home that you run the software of KEDA, or you use these dedicated small machines that KEDA uses in order to do trace, in order to perform experiments, perform measurements, sorry. So in this setting, what you try to do is you try to see where is the destination, for example, a server that you are interested in, for example, let's say Netflix. And then you try to see what is the path that your packet follows in order to find the server. And then you try to identify what we call the border routers. This means the routers that are involved in the interconnection between your network and the network of Netflix, or the network that actually delivers the packets for Netflix. So let's call the router that is in your network the near router, and the other the far router. So what you try to do is you try to send packets, measure the delay until the different interfaces in the near and the far router, as I saw here, and then plot them. So you want to see if actually this diurnal pattern actually appears in your measurements. So in this case, in the upper figure, you can see that there is a clear diurnal pattern. So you see that the congestion, or if you want the buffering, appears on the side of the provider of Netflix and not on your side. And actually something that correlates also with the previous discussions, the previous talk by David, you see also that there is some losses. So there is a clear indication that, you know, there is congestion there, and it has to do with the queuing. Now, of course, it's easy to understand that this is something that triggers congestion, that is like a clear signal, but this doesn't scale. So if you want to do this for 100 or 200 links, you know, it starts getting very difficult. You cannot really plot all of them. So then you have to move from what we call the time domain to the frequency domain, and then you try to see if there is a clear pattern that has a periodicity of one day, of one per day, and then you see that actually the energy of this signal is around this time. So by doing this simple trick that has to do with, you know, the time series that you observe, then you can have a very light way to identify that, yes, there is congestion. Of course, these techniques have some limitations. If you own only vantage points in one, or control vantage points only in one part of the networks, then you may not see the reverse path. There are techniques that you can actually estimate what's the reverse path. And it is possible that the problem is not on the forward path, but it's on the reverse path. So it is always better if you actually use two ways to do this experiment. There are also some black boxes in the system. So for example, we don't know the queue management. And this is actually something that we will really appreciate if we can get some feedback from you, how you configure your routers, what is the queue management that you use. And of course, there are problems that have to do with inference of exactly the interface. So if I see two interfaces and one belongs to my ISP and the other belongs to another network, am I sure that my inference is right? It is possible that another network gives an IP to another network, right? And for this, the only way to do it, to solve this problem, is by collecting massive data and run IP aliasing techniques where you can actually accurately map an IP to an AES. So this study, what shows is that indeed there was congestion, especially last spring. And this has to do with disputes between ISPs and content providers. And of course, when there were some resolutions in terms of peering, then you saw that the congestion goes down, and finally there was no congestion. But this may repeat, right? So having these tools in place, we go to the next level. So we say, okay, we have measured what happens at the edges with using these measurement tools. Can we scale it up to actually see what's happening in the internet? So for this, we use a collaboration with Akamai. And what we do is we use the highly distributed infrastructure of servers that are already deployed by Akamai for its own operation. So in total, there are about 150,000 servers deployed all over the world. There are approximately 10,000 clusters. So the servers are in Iraq. And this rack, it's a cluster, and it's actually located in different places around the world. It can be in academic networks, it can be in enterprise networks, it can be in internet exchange points, peering facilities. So this gives a diversity of the different peerings, or if you want links that you can actually measure. So from these 10,000 clusters, we take 5,000 of them, so we randomly pick half of them. And from each cluster, we get one server that we use as a measurement server. So what we do then is we use the tools that Akamai has already in place. So we were not able to install our own measurements tools. So we have to rely on what Akamai had, and we use two of them: the ping, so just measure the round-trip time, and traceroute. And especially we use the version of Paris traceroute that actually tries to infer the correct path that you follow, because there are always problems when there are packet when there is flow balancing between different flows in the router. So what then we do is we use these 5,000 servers in order to contact each other and do both ping and trace routes. Of course, ping is much lighter than trace route. So what we do is first we massively use ping, so we collect millions of pings for a long time. And then we try to infer, using this FFT approach, do we see any end-to-end measurement that actually triggers congestion? So at this point, we are not sure that there is congestion. We have quantification that might be congestion there. Then we take this, and we select them as candidates. So we said, OK, this set is probably the one that we have to focus. And then we do the heavy experiment with the trace route. So then we use these pairs in order to do trace routes. And then we take the time series of the trace routes, and then we try to infer if there is congestion and where actual congestion occurs. So in the first part, it's very similar to what I presented in the first part. You just do the pings. You have also some indications that there is a packet loss. And then as you can see here, there is also this clear diurnal pattern. By using an FFT, you can say, OK, the FFT tells me that indeed there is congestion. But so we analyze approximately 2 million time series. So it's not 2 million measurements, but it's 2 million time series. So every time series span a week. The frequency of the measurement was one sample every 15 minutes. So what we found is with this rough estimation, approximately 6% of the paths are candidates for congestion. So I'm saying candidates because we don't yet know that there is a congestion. So some changes, for example, can be because of routing. So if you have a change in the routing, you know, they may trigger a change in the end-to-end performance, but you know, this is not due to queuing, right? And then we move on and we do what we call the server-to-server trace route. So for this, we use approximately 100,000 pairs, and the frequency was one every 30 minutes. So let me now walk you through how we infer the congestion and where exactly the congestion occurs. So suppose that you have many hops from the source to the destination, and then you have time, so then you get some time series. So what you try to find out is if at the end you have something that looks like a congestion, you want to find out the first hop where the congestion occurs. So you start from the source, you go through the destination, and you find the first hop that is something like a similar signal of congestion occurs. So in order to do this in a scalable way, we have to use some metric. So in our case, we use a correlation coefficient that actually it's a metric that if I give you two signals, you compare with each other. And we try to find what is the correlation coefficient for every one of these signals. So you start with something that is very unrelated, then you go to something which is very close. So the closer to one you are, the more correlated it is. And then you see that this continues as a shadow in the next hops. Then as I said, we get the first one. And this is on the forward direction. Then we do the same on the backward direction. And then we do the same for all the measurements we have. So in principle, if there is a problem and the problem is observed by many trace routes, all the trace routes will tell you that, okay, you have a problem in this interface or in this router or in this link. Now, a complication comes from the symmetry and the asymmetry of the routes. So what we found is that in approximately 35% of the cases, you have a symmetric routing. So this means that if you go forward or backward, then you see exactly the same router. So you see different IPs, but if you map the IPs to a router, then you see the same router. So then you say, okay, this is where my problem is. And you can go down to a router, and possibly you can map the router to a specific location. Now, if it's asymmetric, then it's getting more complicated. So the only thing you can say is that, okay, I see the problem inside the network or in the connection point. And this is, unfortunately, the majority of the cases, right? So for more than 50% of the cases, there is asymmetric routing. So we can find where the congestion occurs, but not the exact router, but at least we can find if it's inside the network or in the connection point. So what we found is that, surprisingly, there is not as much congestion as we expected in the beginning. Of course, I have to say here that we measure a part of the internet, right? And actually, a part of the internet which is in the core, and it has to do with how a CDN establishes its peerings.
What percentage is that first?
This is quite small. It's like less than 1%. Yeah. But again, I have to clearly say that there might be a bias because we don't measure the whole internet. We measure something like a more professional, if you want, some part of the internet. Something also that was quite surprising for us is that we found that there is congestion both inside the network and in the connection points. Of course, we are aware that some of the inside, if you want, links may be misinterpreted as internal, although it's interconnection with, for example, with some customers, right, of networks. But still, you know, we see many internal links, which means that, you know, in some cases, you may have congestion within a network. Of course, the interconnections between networks, it's more visible. We actually, in some cases, more than 300 or 200 different probes infer that this specific interconnection is congested, and this also shows that maybe it has a bigger effect you know, to the end users. We also found that approximately 50% of the interconnection points are customer provider, and another 50% are peer-to-peer interconnections. So you can have connection, yes.
How did you distinguish between customer provider and peer-to-peer interconnections?
Yeah, so we actually have a paper that describes all these details. It's a very difficult method to find out. You have to take into consideration what is the relationship between the different networks. And also you have to really use different trace routes in order to map the IPs to routers. So there is a technique, but it's a little bit complicated to, I mean, to present right here. In principle, you can find out based on the business relationships of the networks if this is a customer provider or a peer-to-peer, the connection. Value free. Yeah. Right. The thing is, right. Right. So you take the graph of the internet and then you try to run an algorithm which is called CAUREX for algorithm, which is based on what Arthur mentioned, and then you try to find the business relationship between the AS's. So by this, then you can actually say, okay, if I have an interface of this AS and another interface of another AS, and these AS have a specific relationship, then I can say that this is a customer peer or a peer-to-peer relationship. Of course, this is something that's updated all the time. It's very difficult to be very accurate.
Yeah, I think you can find the technical relationship between the two. The business relationship probably is a bit of a guess.
Right. What KEDA is doing is looking at routing addresses.
Yep.
Right?
Right. But this is a very difficult task, and I have to say that in many cases you can have what we call a hybrid relationship. So in one location you might be a customer provider, and in another place you can be provider customer for the same pair,
but
or just be peer to peer.
Just to be clear on this, the technique would not detect the difference between a partial route announcement in a peering. In a settlement-free peering relationship versus a partial route announcement in a paid peering relationship. Is that right?
This is right. Okay. This is right. Of course, there are techniques, there are other techniques more complicated that can try to infer this, but we are in a noisy area now, right?
I don't think this is actually the most important point. I'm just looking at the time. So, sorry.
So also something important we found out is that the type of peering may make a difference. So for example, if you have a private peering, it's more likely that it's congested. If you have a peering that's over the public infrastructure of an ISP, it's less likely that it's congested, but this is an ongoing work. And also it differs a lot from region to region. For example, we have different characteristics in Europe, different in the US. So I would like to conclude maybe with a last result that we found. So we tried to estimate what is actually the overhead of congestion. So we tried to get to consider only the cases that we have symmetric routing, or that we know exactly how the packets flow, in order to remove any bias. So a take-home message is that at least in the US there is a clear number that appears in more than 30% of the times. It was around 25 milliseconds. We attribute to this probably to the way that routers are configured in the network, but for this we also need your feedback. In other places around the globe, we found out that it might be a smaller overhead or a larger overhead. We found actually particularly in the intercontinental links that the overhead can be 50 or more milliseconds. In Asia also, but in order to make some clear statements, we need more measurements. But at least this is what we found so far. And also, I have to tell you also that one overhead can come from congestion, another overhead can come from the change of the routing. We have a paper that we can share with you that we show that in many cases, the change of routing is actually more significant than the overhead of congestion. In some cases, this can contribute to 50 milliseconds or more. And in some cases, you have congestion, and on top, because of the change of routing, you add another 50 milliseconds. So for the next steps, we try to continue measure the internet, try to understand better the congestion. We welcome you to give us any feedback about these black boxes that are the routers for us, how they're configured. We try to scale up the analysis, and we try to make all these results publicly available to you. And with this, I would like to stop. Thank you.
Sorry, yes.
Questions? So one of the prefaces of this piece of like quality of experience, mm-hmm. and to some extent how congestion impacts quality experience. You mentioned there's a lot of measurement of congestion, but not a lot of measurements of non-congestion. And, mm-hmm. and understanding there's a lot of pointing out of congestion. And to get to the question, it's a bit of how much does adaptive routing, and the majority of internet traffic is CDN delivered today. How much does adaptive routing address the 1% of congestion that's out there.
So of course, one of the success, one of the additional degrees of freedom, if you want, that CDNs have, is that they don't rely only on one path. Right, so if you have, as I saw here, like 10,000 locations that potentially you can use to serve a user, of course you can bypass all of this. And they are very successful in doing this. Actually, some of the measurements that we utilize are also utilized by the CDNs to actually find, okay, where the congestion is to bypass it. There are cases where there is only one path. So in this case, you cannot do anything. And also, not all the traffic comes from CDNs. A significant part comes from CDNs. So some estimates, maybe 30, 40, maybe 50%, but not all the traffic. Maybe higher. But also, not all the CDNs are as highly distributed as Akamai. So for example, Google, only the last 2 years, started deploying massively servers. There are other CDNs like Netflix that has a history only of 1 year that actually tried to deploy more servers. So before that, it was maybe in a few data centers. There is Limelight, which is also a big CDN. The strategy is that we get some well-connected data centers in the network, maybe 20 or 40, and that's it. So I totally agree that you can change, actually, you don't change routing. This is something that we have to be careful, because CDNs do not own a backbone, so they don't do the announcements. What they get is they get announcements, and then somehow they can use it appropriately. So instead of adapting, I would say a short selection, if you want, of the traffic. Yes?
If I heard you right, you said there's a preliminary diagnosis that, 50% of congestion might be caused by routing changes?
What I mentioned is that sometimes routing changes may have an effect of more than 50 milliseconds.
50 milliseconds.
Overall end-to-end. We have seen also, I mean, I can share the document with you. We have seen also cases that, this might be also of your interest, that if you go via IPv4 or IPv6, you have a significant difference. So sometimes you may want to follow an IPv4 path, sometimes you want to follow an IPv6 path or switch between them for the same end-to-end points. So I think we start understanding, you know, all this complexity, but we have to continue, you know, measuring the internet. More questions, yes.
So the paper that George was citing in the second half, where George was talking about half of that paper, one was congestion, and this was in the context where the path was the same throughout this week. Mm. The other half of the paper was looking at changes in routing, and this is changes in BGP routing. And we could see times where the route changed and where the round trip times went up or down. And the very high level statement is, most of the time in this routing study, about 16 months, changes in routing had minimal effect on round trip times. Similarly, congestion, most of the time, or most links, there's not congestion. On the occasions where there are, you can ask the question, which seems worse? Changes in BGP routing in terms of affecting round trip times, or congestion? And as an overall statement, it's not true in every point pair, but averaging overall across the core of the internet, changes in routing when the bad periods are worse than, are more common and have larger impact, that is larger change, than congestion.
So we can come back to some of this after the next talk, but let's get Steve up. We can talk about losses and then we can have a general discussion.
Yep.